And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Machuda.
All right, welcome everybody. Welcome back. Time for another session of Catholic Apologetics. You have entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. I am your humble host, Gary Machuda, and also part-time sensei, part-time everything else. Nice guy all the time. it's great to be with you yet again. And there's a few things I need to point out before I forget. The dojo is coming out west. That's right. This February 20th, I'm coming out to California. I'm going to be down there in the Virgin Most Powerful Studios for a couple days doing live broadcasts, so I get to meet everybody there. And also, like I said, on the 20th, I'm going to be at the Sacred Heart Chapel doing a talk on apologetics. So I'd love to see you there and get to meet some of the people that have been following the program. And, man, it's been a lot of fun with the guests that I've had on so far. Nothing but the best. You know, it's my goal. This is the reason I get up every morning. Is if I could help somebody know Jesus more and love Jesus more, then I've done my job. So my goal for Hands-On Apologetics here on Virgin Most Powerful Radio is to help you learn more about Jesus, love Jesus more, and, you know, learn how to explain and defend the faith. If I could do that, I feel like I've accomplished what God has sent me to do. At least that's my life goal. Like I said, that's why I get up in the morning. And I'm trying to put together the best possible apologetic podcast I possibly can. And I want to encourage you, if you like something that you hear, not only on my program, but the other programs on Virgin Most Powerful Radio, please share them. Let us know. You know, like us on Facebook, like us on YouTube, like us on social media. Share the programs. Let people know about the programs, because all of Virgin Most Powerful programs are put on the air by you. It's all you. So, you know, thank you for allowing me to have this platform and inviting me to come and share the faith with you. And please keep up the good work. Keep us in your prayers. Tell people about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. I know Terry Barber actually has brand new cards that he has printed up. You can go to the virginmostpowerfulradio.org website and you can order those cards and you can just give them to friends or whatever. And also your financial contributions. Like I said, we're doing the work of the Lord, but that doesn't mean that we're out of the world. We still have electric bills. You know, we still have expenses. And so your contributions are greatly appreciated, and especially your monthly support, because that way I know when I used to run a nonprofit ministry, it was so helpful when you were able to say, I know that I'm going to at least have this amount of money to budget. And if you can't do that, you can't plan and so on and so forth. So, you know, thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to Hands-On Apologetics. And please spread the word, because like I said, I want to try to give you the best possible program I can. So I'm inviting the best apologist on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, to come into the dojo and help us, you know, become better at explaining, sharing the faith, helping people to know and love Jesus more. So if you want to be part of the program, join us. You can call us at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Or if you're too shy to come on board, but you would like to maybe throw out a question or maybe explain a situation that you're going through right now, maybe at work or with relatives or something like that, and you'd like the dojo to, you know, the people in the dojo to kind of bounce ideas around, send us an email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. Handsonapologetics.com. That's my website, that, and also GaryMachuda.com. And on that site, you can find out what's going on with the other things I'm involved with. And also, I have a page dedicated to the show. So you get to see all the topics, and sometimes you get to see topics of days ahead. There's links and so on and so forth. And I also know through the email that many of you enjoy listening to this on podcast. So for anyone who would like to share this program or perhaps listen to it at a different location, different time, you can always go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org's website, and there is all the podcasts of all the programs. So maybe down the road you're talking to somebody who thinks that Christianity is a myth. You can scroll down the programs and see that program we did with John Sorensen on mysticism. And the same thing's true with all the programs on Virgin Most Powerful. All right, very good. Well, coming up tomorrow, before I forget, I know Thanksgiving's coming closer. So I wanted to end on a high note before Thanksgiving. We are going to invite back to the dojo Master Apologist William Albrecht. If you remember, William is a Catholic apologist out there fighting the good fight. This guy has debated more people than you can imagine from such a wide variety of backgrounds. And what he's going to do, he has a debate coming up, and I want him to talk a little bit about this debate with an Islamic scholar about the Virgin Mary. So I'm going to have William come on the show tomorrow, and we're going to talk about Islam and the Virgin Mary. So that should be a very interesting show for you. Oh, before I forget, also I got to give my shout out to those watching the live stream on Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. It's always fun to see familiar names up on the chat room over at YouTube. Hi. And hi, Mouse Pell One and the rest of the gang. Hope everybody's having a great day. And I hope you're having a great day, too, by the way. So William Albrecht's coming up tomorrow. We're going to do something different in the dojo today. We're going to do a debriefing session for the first half of the show. So we're going to debrief this incredible show I had yesterday, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if you missed it, please go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org and .com and listen to the podcast. We had Father Robert Spitzer join us yesterday, who is a polymath. The guy's an expert in everything. And he has so many great apologetics. But of all the things he's ever taught, the thing that I think he just knocks it out of the park, and he did so on the podcast yesterday, was his argument about the five transcendentals, the five transcendental desires that every single human being has, and how that points us to God. And so what I'd like to do in the first half of the program is I want to do a little debriefing. You know, let's talk about that program. So if you listen to the program and you have some thoughts or comments, give us a call, 888-526-2151. I'll bring you on the air. I know somebody called during the program, but unfortunately they hung up before we could have a break in the conversation to bring them to. So if you're listening, whoever called, you have my personal apology. Also, Thanksgiving and the holidays are coming up. Many of us are joyful, but I know a lot of us are a bit reticent because the holidays is when family comes together and you see people, more distant relatives that you haven't seen in a while. And many times, you know, you have Uncle Fred or Aunt Sue or somebody who will throw in this anti-Catholic Molotov cocktail and just embroil, you know, because things just aren't, you know, tense enough, they will throw out some sort of anti-Catholic remark. And what I've been doing for the last few weeks is I've been hoping to kind of fortify you with some rejoinders, some ways you could respond to some of these typical anti-Catholic remarks. So today I'm going to throw in the kitchen sink, and we're going to use hostile witnesses, and I'm going to show you how you can use hostile witnesses to quickly debunk myths about the Crusades, the Inquisition, and Hitler's Pope. So that's my goal, okay? So God willing, we'll be able to do it. So we're going to get ready for it. We're going to talk turkey, okay, if you will, apologetics. And, of course, we're going to do our Finding the Fallacy and to meet the Early Church Fathers. So since time is scarce and we have a lot of material to go over, let's see. Let's jump right into the Finding the Fallacy. Finding the Fallacy for today is the cum hoc ergo propter hoc. Yes, this is an English broadcast, but that is Latin, because this particular fallacy is known by its Latin term, which means with this, therefore, because of this. Cum hoc ergo propter hoc. Now, this is a fallacy that's very similar to another one we've had a few weeks ago called post hoc ergo propter hoc. Okay, which means after this, therefore because of this. And in that podcast, I mentioned that this is really where a lot of superstitions come about. When somebody reasons that because something bad happens after an event, they falsely reason that that must have been the cause of whatever that bad thing was. Okay, so that's post hoc ergo propter hoc. But this fallacy today is very similar, but it's not arguing that because one thing followed another, it must have been caused by that thing. This one says that if it happened along with another thing, it must be the cause. Okay, so it's not afterwards, it actually is. So event C, let's say events A and B happened both at the same time. Someone could fallaciously or incorrectly argue that one must have caused the other. Okay, the problem with this, of course, is that with cum hoc ergo propter hoc, with this, therefore, because of this, you find out that that isn't necessarily true. It's a very loose association. In fact, this is, I think, what generates what I mentioned earlier, this false belief that's fairly generally accepted today called mythicism, in which Christianity is seen as a revamping of old pagan myths. But the thing is it's just because two things may have been together at the same time, it doesn't mean paganism caused Christianity anymore. Christianity caused paganism. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about Meet the Early Church Fathers, and then we're going to do a debriefing. Yeah, stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you to the upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference, January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in downtown Covina. If you go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org, you can join us with that or call us at 877-526-2151. Jesse Romero will be there. Father Wolfgang will be there. And our very own Matt Arnold will be there, and I'll be the MC. Don't miss out on this wonderful event, January 11th and 12th.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. Yeah, we're talking apologetics, and we were just finishing up the cum hoc ergo propter hoc. In other words, that's a fallacy, which reasons, basically, that with something, therefore because of something. And like I said, this is a cause of what's called mythicism that people see two things occurring in the ancient world, and they try to make one the cause of the other. But the problem is that it's really too loose of an association. It's sometimes the effect and the cause and the effect happen around the same time. But it doesn't follow that because the two things happen, that one must be the cause of the other. In fact, usually it's a third thing causes both of them. So that's our fallacy for today. And like I said, it's kind of a similar one to post hoc, ergo propter hoc, the one that argues after this, therefore because of this. All right, so let's jump into the Meet Early Church Father for today, and that is Leonidas of Byzantium. Leonidas of Byzantium, who lived from 500 AD to 543 AD. And, you know, which is the case with many of these minor church fathers, is that we don't have an awful lot of biographical data on them. And their importance is really how early they wrote and how well accepted they were. So there's one of two possibilities who this Leonidas might be. One might be that he was the theological advisor to Emperor Justinian. And ultimately, that would make him responsible for a condemnation of what's called the three chapters, which I don't want to get involved in. Basically, the three chapters is kind of a mess in that if you're familiar with the three popes, they're often accused of teaching error, like Honorius, Virgilius, Liberius. You'd know what the three chapters are. So it's possibly could have been this theological advisor, or he was a hermit, and just simply a hermit who apparently was influenced a lot by another early church father named Origen. Okay, so that's Leonidas of Byzantium. And let's see, we have a quote from him where he says, like sacred scripture and the speculations handed down to us from the fathers, we frequently designate the whole from the parts and the part by the name of the whole. As when we call the Word the Son of Man and confess that the Lord of glory was crucified. But we do not, by this communication of idioms, take away the special basis of the priority of the one or the other in itself. These things are made known to us by proper names, since we contemplate the communication of idioms in the one person, and the difference of natures we acknowledge in propriety to that which is held in common. So in other words, Jesus is, we can appropriate certain idioms to him, but ultimately Jesus has two natures, divine and human. Okay, so yeah, that's a pretty deep quote from Leonidas of Byzantium. And that takes care of the early church fathers for today. So it's time for our Spitzer breakdown. We need to debrief the incredible presentation Father Robert Spitzer gave on the program yesterday. There's just so much there to comment on. And I wish we had a couple hours with him because, man, he is a scholar of scholars, I tell you. And so we were talking about an area of apologetics that I think could be incredibly fruitful for today. But for some reason, it's just not in the lineup. A lot of people don't know the argument from the five transcendental desires. Okay, so what Father Spitzer said yesterday was he was going through these five desires and explaining that there's something strangely innate built in every human being, in that we have these five desires, but we desire them in the utmost perfection and fullness. In fact, the one thing we know about these five desires is that it ain't here, okay? Like, we all desire perfect and unconditional truth. We all desire the answers to everything and the fullness of answers to everything. Yet, time and time again, we run into imperfect explanations. And so, and the same thing's true with love and justice and beauty and being. And I'm going to try something. I was debating whether to try this on the air without testing it. I'm going to give it a shot. I don't know how it's going to sound on your end, but I want to play a clip from Father Spitzer. It might sound a little echoey, but we'll see if it works, okay? Here it goes.
I'm love.
Yeah. You know what? It's not working. I could tell right now. I should have fixed this up beforehand. So he went through truth, love, justice, beauty, being, right? And he says, we all have this innate. We know that we have truth, but it's not perfect truth. We have solutions and explanations, but we know they're not perfect and absolute complete explanations. Love, you know, we all experience love, but we all experience love in an imperfect way. There's always something wrong, you know. It's you love someone or you love something, but there's always these little imperfections, the things that doesn't completely fulfill everything that you would think of love or justice or beauty or being. And so the question that he asked was, what's the source of this tacit awareness that we want to know everything about everything? We want perfect love. We want perfect justice. We want perfect goodness. We want perfect beauty. What is the source of our experiences? Because we know from one thing that we couldn't have possibly learned about this absolutely perfect truth, perfect love, perfect justice, perfect beauty from here, anything here on earth, because it doesn't exist here on earth, right? Right? So where does this experience, this desire, this innate desire that all of us have for these five desires that are called transcendentals? In other words, it transcends anything here on earth. Okay. And where does he get it? Well, what Father Spitzer points out is that Plato and Aristotle and Aquinas and others posit that we have this implicit awareness of someone who is perfect truth, the answer to all questions, the perfect intelligibility of everything, perfect love without any imperfections, perfect justice, perfect beauty, perfect being. And that's an innate desire for God, okay? And he says we experience this, and he uses the example of a horizon. Now, when I first heard that, I thought that's not that great of an example. Like, what is a horizon? You know, he's talking about the perfect perfect truth. It's like we sense it as an horizon. We see all imperfections on this side of the horizon. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, wow, that is actually a very good analogy. If you think of the sun about to rise over the horizon, the sunlight kind of illuminates the world, right? You can see things, but it's a bit dim. It's imperfect. But you also have a clear vision of this horizon, right, that you can't see over, but you can sense that the fullness of this light, this glory, is on the other side of that horizon. And so Father Spitzer says that we have this innate desire, not because so much of what we experience here, but of an awareness that over that horizon, beyond our sight, there is an answer that is perfect, complete, total truth, perfect, complete, total love, perfect, complete, total justice or goodness, perfect, complete beauty, perfect, complete home, right? Yeah. So that is God, right? That is God. Now, I interrupted him because, by the way, when I invite somebody the caliber of Father Spitzer, I try to hold back. So I hope you appreciate that. I just wanted him to let it all out, right? Give us the full lesson, unadulterated. You don't need me piping in. But sometimes I get so excited when I interview great guest is that I have to jump in and make comments. And I did at the beginning of a break, and I want to share a little bit more about that. What I love about the arguments from the transcendental desires is that there's just no way for a person to deny their existence, right? Because I said, if someone says, no, I don't think there's complete unadulterated truth out there, then you say, well, that's interesting because you can see in my explanation that my explanation isn't totally true. You desire a complete explanation, which is exactly what I just said everybody has. So it's like the more you try to deny the transcendentals, the more you actually affirm the transcendentals, right? I love that. And I also love it because when you have somebody who's really skeptical, okay, somebody who's very much against belief in God. They deny the existence, and everything is very skeptical. Really, what they're doing is they're taking these transcendental desires and they're really applying it to the world, and they're coming up with all these problems. For example, what's the biggest argument atheists have against theism, against God's existence? Well, the problem of evil. Well, how do you have a problem of evil if you don't have an innate desire for perfect justice? In other words, the problem of evil is basically saying God's not playing by the rules. You see what I mean? So the more you fight against these transcendentals, the more you actually affirm them, which I think is great, you know. Father also talked about how pleasure in things that we experience with created things terminates with their use. He used the example, and if I could have played a clip, I would. He used the example of listening to Brahms as a young kid and just being awe-inspired by the beauty of composition of Brahms. But then he noticed that after a few performances, listening to it over and over again, it's like, well, gee, I wonder if Brahms wrote anything else, right? And that's the same true with all the things in this world that are beautiful, good, true. They kind of terminate with use. You can love somebody, but, you know, if it's the same thing over and over again, you know, there's these imperfections, or love a thing or anything that's finite, that's limited. They terminate with use. Think of video games. That's a perfect example. You buy a video game or an app on your phone, and you play it, and you play it nonstop for hours. And it's all total joy. It's great. But after a while, it kind of gets boring, right? So the manufacturers have to kind of tweak them. They have to add new features. They have to keep the interest in the game going. Why? Because our desires, our transcendental desires, are in a sense unlimited. We desire something unlimited. Okay. So finite things like games and music and things like that, we recognize them as beauty, but there's something missing. We desire a beauty, truth, love, goodness that's infinite, eternal. That's God. And, you know, another thing that he pointed out was that the ultimate goal of Christianity is happiness, right? That's our goal, is to be happy with God in the next life. And if you look around with Catholics, you really don't get that impression. But that's really our goal. Become Catholic to ultimately enjoy eternal happiness now. Stay tuned, and we'll talk about hostile witnesses on the other side of the break. It's Gary Machuda, and you're listening to Hands-On Apologetics.
Matthew Arnold here, encouraging you to go to vmpr.org to register for our upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference this January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina. Father Wolfgang will be speaking along with Jesse Romero, Terry Barber as MC, and yours truly, talking about spiritual warfare and the family. Protect your family now. Go to vmp.org and register for this conference. Don't miss it.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Oh.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matsuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're finishing up the debriefing on a Father Spitzer program we had yesterday on the five transcendentals, these transcendent desires we have for perfect truth, perfect goodness, perfect justice, perfect love, beauty. And ultimately, that's found in God, because we desire something infinite that this world can't supply. And I was just finishing up my thought that in Catholicism, why are we Catholic, right? Is it to be happy? Well, I think most of us don't think about that. Ultimately, you know, what does it mean to be Catholic? Is it to avoid the evil and do the good? Is it to keep the precepts of the church? Now, all of these things are good. But the core meaning of Catholicism is union with God, who fulfills these desires within us. So ultimately, our goal in being Catholic is to be happy, to have happiness, right? And to have it eternally with God. Now, before you start thinking, okay, I don't know about this. This sounds a little dicey to me. I don't know if it really is solid Catholic teaching. But look it up in St. Thomas's Summa Contra Gentiles. He starts by talking about how God is happiness in himself. He is happiness, or blessedness, he uses that word. And ultimately, he's our final end, our final goal, because God created us so that we can share in this eternal happiness that he has in this triune community, right? And so, and I thought, well, okay, that's Thomas Aquinas. You know, is it really Catholic? And then I remembered in the old Baltimore Catechism. Remember that, folks? The old Baltimore Catechism. You can't accuse Baltimore Catechism of being new modernist stuff, right? What's the first, one of the first questions we learned in the Baltimore Catechism? Why did God make me, right? God made me to know him, to love him, and to serve him in this world. Why? So to be happy with him forever in heaven. That's the Baltimore Catechism. And somehow we missed it. See, the world is miserable. People are miserable. They are stuck on the trying to get pleasure out of finite things. Right? They're looking for love in all the wrong places, so to speak. And we're sitting on a gold mine, folks, because we have the answer to the world's problems. We can come to a person who's miserable and say, look, this is why you're miserable. Because you have these desires that can't be fulfilled by anything here on earth. And so, you know, you need to embrace he who is the fulfillment of all of that. You know, God the Father through Jesus and the Holy Spirit. So this is evangelism dynamite as far as I'm concerned. I mean, this is really apropos for our time. And, of course, any salesman will tell you if you want to sell a product, you need to present it as a solution to a problem. Well, we have problems of monumental importance today. And so, you know, use the transcendentals. Use the transcendentals. And help people so that they could be happy and joyful, right? And also, if you aren't aware of that, that maybe things aren't going well in your life, maybe because you're not getting the right answers or you're not experiencing true, authentic love or true or authentic justice, or any of the other desires that we have. Realize that's just hunger for heaven, and use that as fuel for your spiritual journey, okay? All right, so that's the debriefing for today. That's what I got out of it. And by the way, if anybody wants to join the program, maybe you've heard of the program yesterday, Father Robert Spitzer, and you'd like to join in, please give us a call, 888-526-2151, and I'd be glad to talk about it. There's so much there. He is such an awesome teacher that we could literally probably spend days just picking apart some of the teachings he gave. All right, so it's holiday season. We have Thanksgiving coming up, Christmas, New Year's, family events, parties. You're going to run into Uncle Fred or Aunt Marge or maybe a coworker who just to liven things up will throw down some sort of anti-Catholic trope or anti-Christian barb. So what do you do? What do you do? How do you answer? Well, when you're in a party setting, you really can't go into depth. You know, you really can't say, well, let me explain you the true history of whatever. You have to get your defense in quickly and kind of silence them. You want to show them that they may not know everything about what they're talking about. And if you could do that, you've planted a lot of good seeds. Okay, so what I've been doing for over the past couple of weeks is I've been going to my book, which is titled Hostile Witnesses, How the Enemies of Christianity Proved the Truth of the Church. Okay, and we're going through and using the enemies of the church to poke that hole, to pop that balloon of these anti-Catholic arguments. And we've been focusing mainly on miracles and this idea that, well, you know, Jesus didn't work miracles, he's just one of faith healers somewhere else. And we showed how the pagans, we talked about Tacitus, the Roman historian last time, how he said he affirmed certain basics about the gospel, but he also mentioned something kind of in passing that was very important, namely that the pagans saw Christians as magicians. Yeah, you heard me right, magicians. Now, you have to ask yourself, why? Why would pagans see Christians as magicians? And the answer is, if you look at the New Testament and you look at other pagan writings, the truth is because Christians were working miracles, miraculous healings. They were expelling demons. And so the only way the pagans could fathom what they're doing is they figured, well, this is some sort of strange magic these Christians are using because pagan magicians would use really long formulas, and they'd try to name all these secret names of the gods and try to coerce them into doing their bidding. But oddly enough, these weird Christians, they just whisper the name Jesus, and demons flee, or people are healed instantaneously when Jesus is mentioned. No formulas or anything, just the name of Jesus or the Trinity. And so Tacitus says that actually, Christians began be more punished for this crime than it was for Nero's firing of Rome, you know, setting fire to Rome. But I just like to do one more hostile witness in regard, because this is actually kind of funny. But, you know, like the whole thing with hostile witnesses is, you know, in history, every action has an equal opposite reaction. So to prove the truth of Christianity, if you look at how the pagans try to dismiss it or sweep it under the rug, you see that they're really dealing with an actual phenomenon, something that actually occurred. Well, anyway, in the 4th century, we have a bunch of magical texts by pagans. This is in Egypt. Okay, Egypt was known for its magicians. And there are two texts that we found where it mentions Jesus, okay, in these pagan magical documents in the 4th century. Let me read one. I'm just going to read the only part that that talks about Jesus. This first one says, the formula is to be spoken over his head, place olive branch before him, stand behind him and say, Hail God of Abraham, Hail God of Isaac, Hail God of Jacob, Jesus Christos, the Holy Spirit, the Son of the Father. Now, this is a pagan document now, folks. What's going on here? And there's another one where it says, I conjure you by the God of the Hebrews, Jesus, which is kind of interesting because the pagans knew that Christians believed Jesus was God, something people deny even today. But what's going on here? Well, apparently the pagans saw that Christian miracles, Christian exorcisms worked. So what they're trying to do is co-opt Christianity in order to kind of make their work a little easier. Okay, so that proves that there was a real authentic phenomenon going on that even these magicians figured, well, somehow we got to kind of tap into what's going on here. Now, here's the funny part, folks. The title given at the top of that first citation I gave says this, excellent rite for driving out demons. In other words, this thing really works, this invoking Jesus Christos, Holy Spirit, Son of the Father. And another one is titled Attested Charm of Possessius for the Possession of Demons. In other words, it's a tested charm. In other words, it's saying, this formula works, folks. Invoke Jesus' name. So, I mean, that's a really interesting kind of left-handed compliment that the miracles that the early Christians were performing were real and authentic, so much so that the pagans themselves actually started copying it. Okay. All right. I love that. I think it's kind of funny, but it's also a very powerful proof that something was going on there. All right, so let's go to the next one. This is also a favorite topic for anti-Catholic barbs, and that's the Crusades. Right, the Crusades. What are the Crusades? Well, if you're at a party and maybe Uncle Fred or Aunt, you know, Genevieve or whoever, they might throw down, oh, the Crusades, that was just a money-grabbing device by the Pope to grab money and lands in the Middle East and enslave and force the conversions of Muslims. And it's an example of essentially modern-day imperialism, where we're just taking over other people's lands. What do you say to that? Well, if you're at a party, you can't go through the whole history of all the Crusades. Right. Obviously, that's not going to work. And Uncle Fred and Aunt Genevieve, they're not going to listen to you anyway. But what you could do is this. You could cite a hostile witness as counter evidence. In other words, I'm going to talk about, I don't know if I'll have enough time right here. We'll probably have to do it at the other side of the break. But you can point out that there was a Muslim, a devout Muslim named Ibn Jubayr, who traveled to the Holy Land between the First and Second Crusades in around 1184, okay? And he kept a journal, and we actually have the travel journal of this Muslim person as he's traveling through Muslim lands and Crusader lands. And he has a lot to say. Now, remember, this is not a source friendly to Christianity. This is a Muslim who hates what he experiences. In fact, when I read on the other side of the break, you'll see what I mean, where he actually points out that that whole myth is completely garbage. All right, so you want to stay tuned. We'll talk a little bit about Ibn Jubayr's journal and what he has to say about how how Muslims were treated in Crusader lands. Don't want to miss it, folks. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber. I want to invite you to the Spiritual Warfare Conference coming January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. It's going to be fantastic. I want to encourage you to sign up by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. One of the speakers is sitting right next to me, Matthew Arnold. Matt, what are you going to be telling our folks about?
I'm going to tell them about my journey into the Catholic Church, because in my younger days, I was in the entertainment business. I was all involved with cult beliefs and practices like tarot cards and astrology and even channeling. And I had my own brush with the demonic.
Wow. Not only Matt, but Father Wolfgang from the Opus Angelorum, popular priest, he's welcome back. And our friend Jesse Romero, my partner on the Terry and Jesse Show, will be there. Don't miss it. Go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call us at 877-526-2151.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking hostile witnesses and how you can use hostile witnesses to help you out next time that you're at a family gathering and somebody decides to throw a grenade of an anti-Catholic canard. And how you can easily refute them just simply by appealing to the enemies of the church. So we're talking about getting our information from my book, Hostile Witnesses, How the Historic Enemies of the Church Prove Christianity. It's available through Catholic Answers Press. And there's lots of fun stuff like enemies from the New Testament, pagan enemies, Jewish enemies, the Quran, Muslims. In fact, we're talking about the Crusades and Muslims, but I also have the Inquisition, Protestantism, an atheist at Lourdes, things like that. So to start off, the canard usually is that the Crusades were this money-grabbing, land-grabbing endeavor by the Pope, the greedy Pope, to try to force the conversion of poor Muslims. And so this is kind of a form of European imperialism, blah, 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 right? Well, what do? You can't explain all the Crusades. In fact, just the FYI to everybody, a good friend of mine, Steve Weidenkopf, who wrote a book, The Glory of Crusades, we're going to have him on in December. So if you want to learn everything about the Crusades, tune into that program. But, of course, you're at a party. You can't give a total explanation about what's involved with the Crusades. So what do? Well, I say appeal to a hostile witness. And like I said, there's this It's a Muslim person, a devout Muslim named Ibn Jaber, who traveled through the Holy Land, through Crusader lands. I think it was between the First and Second Crusade. And he wrote some very interesting things in his journal that totally debunks this myth about, you know, money grabbing, enslaving Muslims, forcing conversions, and so on. In fact, it's funny. Well, let me read it to you. I'll read a couple of clips. The one thing he said, he reported on September 13th, 1184, he wrote this, quote, "One of the strangest things in the world is that Muslim caravans go forth to Frankish lands while Frankish captives enter Muslim lands." Now, let's think about that for a second. He says, now, he's a Muslim. He has no love for Christianity. And Frankish lands is the Crusader lands. You notice that Muslims can go and they can barter and sell and stuff among Crusader lands, you know, uninhibited amongst their enemy, right, the Crusaders. While in Muslim lands, you have Franks, you have these Crusaders being held captive. They're entering the land as slaves. Huh. That doesn't sound like a, you know, this mean totalitarian Christians coming in and, you know, and squashing the inhabitants and forcing them to become Christian. No, Ibn Jaber is actually kind of stunned to find that Muslims actually can hang around in Crusader lands, have a commerce, sell stuff. But, you know, it's not true the other way, because the Franks, they go into Muslim lands as slaves, as captives. Okay, here's, if you think that is wild, wait till you hear this quote. This is a recording that he made in September 17th, 1184. And he said, "We moved from Tibben, may God destroy it, at daybreak on Monday. Our way lay through continuous farms and orderly settlements whose inhabitants were all Muslims, living comfortably with the Franks. God protect us from such temptation." Okay. "They surrender half their crops to the Franks at harvest time and pay as well a toll tax of 1 dinar and 5 quatars per each person. Other than that, they are not interfered with, save a light tax on fruit trees. Their houses and all their effects are left in their full possession. All the coastal cities occupied by the Franks, the Crusaders, are managed in this fashion. their rural districts, their villages and farms belonging to Muslims, but their hearts have been seduced, he says, for they observe how unlike them in ease and comfort their brethren in Muslim regions are under Muslim governors. This is one of the misfortunes afflicting the Muslims. Now listen to this line, folks. The Muslim community bewails the injustice of the landlord of their own faith, Islam, and applauds the conduct of their opponents and enemies, the Franks' landlord. And he says, they must turn from God. Okay. In other words, what a horrible temptation. Why? Because the Muslims, you know, if the whole point of the Crusades was to squash the Muslims, take their land, forcibly convert them to Christianity, Ibn Jabbar says, no, it's the exact opposite. They're living in comfort. Muslims are well treated. They get to keep their houses, their property. They have to pay a tax, right? But it's not like a very bad tax. It's something that's very amenable. And then he contrasts it with the Muslims who live in Muslim lands. And he says that these landlords are unjust and they're horrible. And he says that the people living with the Franks are basically, you know, they like us Christian enemies because we're so nice and we're allowed this freedom, while their compatriots in Muslim lands bewail their governors. So if Aunt Genevieve or Uncle Fred throws out this crusader canard, just say, yeah, well, then how do you explain Aunt Fred or Aunt Geneva? How do you explain why Ibn Jabbar, who was actually there, actually says that Muslims were treated very well? They had their own property and they were actually treated better in Christian lands than they were in Muslim lands. Can you explain that to me? And that, see, what that does is now they are on the defensive. Okay. And you kind of showed everybody at the gathering that maybe Uncle Fred and Aunt Geneva doesn't have the whole story. Okay. You don't want to pin them. You don't want to corner them. You don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. Well, maybe a little uncomfortable. But, you know, you just want them to realize that what they think they believe really isn't true, that there really is another side to the story. And if you could do that, trust me, you can do a lot, right? Yes. Hey, I'm getting shout-outs on Facebook. I'm getting shout-outs on YouTube. Thank you, students in that section of the dojo. You know, I hate – one of the bad things when you write a book is you really love it, and when you share it with others, people are like, yeah, he's trying to make a buck. But, yeah, Hostile Witnesses, if I pick it up from Catholic Answers, is a great organization. I read it. I'm constantly rereading my own work just because these quotes are so pregnant with meaning. All right. What about dump, dump, dom, the Inquisition, right? The Inquisition. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. The first thing you want to ask is which Inquisition are you talking about? Because there were several Inquisitions. People don't know that. And but chances are they're talking about the Spanish Inquisition, which has probably the worst track record. And so what do you do? I mean, if Uncle Fred is going on and on about, oh, the Inquisition, you know, that's Catholic tolerance that, you know, they tortured Muslims and Jews, and the Pope was all for it, and the Inquisition was kind of like the strong arm of the Pope. Okay, what can you say to that? Well, you can use Hostile Witnesses. And I actually give some quotes from a Grand Inquisitor turned kind of anti-Catholic, pro-Napoleon. So I give some quotes from him. I give some quotes from a Protestant historian who basically admits that if it wasn't for the Inquisition, civilization in Europe would collapse. But I want to give you a quote from a guy who actually isn't quite so much an enemy of the church, but a friend of the church, except for this. And this is a letter from King Ferdinand II of Aragon. He's the king of Spain, okay? And most people don't realize this, but the Pope started getting information from Muslims who converted to Christianity that the Inquisition was causing trouble for them. And so the Pope was going to intervene. He was going to kind of stop things, put a halt to it, put some safeguards in, because these are Catholics that are being harassed by the crown and the Inquisition under the crown. Well, what people don't know is there's a letter written to Pope Sixtus IV in May 13th, 1482. And he says this. He says, "Things have been told me, Holy Father, which, if true, would seem to merit the greatest astonishment." And he continues, "To these rumors, however, we must give no credence, because they seem to be things which in no way have been conceded by your holiness as your duty to the Inquisition." Now notice what he says here. "But if by chance concessions have been made through the persistent and cunning persuasion of the conversos," the Muslim converts, "listen to this, I intend never to let them take effect. Take care, therefore, not to let the matter go further and to revoke any concessions and entrust us with the care of this question." So right there, the king basically tells the Pope, the Inquisition is under our control, not yours, Holy Father. And in fact, he threatened to take his troops away from Sicily, I believe it was, that was protecting Italy from the invasion of the Muslims. So throw that out. Oh, it was the strong arm of the Pope, huh? Well, why did King Ferdinand threaten the Pope and basically say, "Look, this is the crown's problem, not yours. We're going to deal with the conversos any way we want"? Ah, what do you do? All right, well, hey, let's close the program with Nazis, shall we? It's funny, people, you know, they always ask of the hostile witnesses, are there any Nazis in the book? And unfortunately, yes, there are. But it's interesting, I have these quotes from Nazis who give these left-handed compliments to Christianity. For example, Adolf Hitler himself, now this is recounted in the memoirs of Albert Speer, Inside the Third Reich. He recounts Adolf Hitler saying the following, quote, "You see, it has been our misfortune to have the wrong religion. Why didn't we have the religion of the Japanese, who regard sacrifice for the fatherland as the highest good? Or the Mohammedan, Islam, too, would have been much more compatible with us than Christianity. Why do we have to be Christian with its meekness and flabbiness?" Now, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? It's like Hitler saw that Shintoism, militant Shintoism, and Islam was actually more compatible with the Nazi program than Christianity. But here's a great one. You've probably heard of the myth of Hitler's Pope, that somehow Pope Pius XII was complicit with the Nazis. Listen to this quote. This is a communique of Reinhard Heydrich in January 15, 1943. He says, "It is true that the Pope does not refer to National Socialist in Germany by name, but his speech, his Christmas speech, was one long attack against everything we stand for." Everything we stand for. And it's a juicy quote. I could quote more, but I hear the music. So there's your hostile witnesses, folks. You know, if we don't have time to go over it, I wish you could use it for your next Thanksgiving gathering if someone throws out a canard. Coming up tomorrow, William Albrecht. And also spread the word about Hands-On Apologetics, especially Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Coming up next, it's time for High Intensity Talk Radio, Catholic Talk Radio, with a dynamic duo of Terry Barber and Jesse Romero. I'm Gary Machuda, turning off the lights once again at the Apologetics Dojo. I wish everybody have a blessed day, and take care. Bye-bye.
Scripture tells us that David beat Goliath with a sling and 5 smooth stones. Funny, the rosary looks kind of like that. The rosary is a Catholic devotional prayer. A set of 1 Our Father followed by 10 Hail Marys is called a decade. You do 5 decades and you have a rosary. And for each decade, we meditate on a mystery from Jesus' life. So the prayers we're breathing in and out set the stage for an encounter with the Word of God. Do a quick search online for the mysteries of the rosary, which are different for each day of the week. What I really love about old-school Catholic devotionals like this is simplicity. I'll be honest, it's not always easy to pray or to lead my family in prayer. What do I do? What do I say? Rosary, problem solved. Look, every family's a mess in its own special way. Bring God into the mess. Your family's problems might be Goliaths. Maybe the solution's as simple as a sling and 5 smooth stones. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.